Good evening. I'm Nancy Nangeroni.
I'm Gordine McKenzie.
And this is Gender Talk. Hello again, this is Gender Talk Worldwide Radio that talks about transgenderism in the first person. Each week we bring you news, information, and exciting new voices that challenge our traditional view of gender and more. Tonight we'll take our first good look at the organization called Human Rights Watch and their International Film Festival. Our guest will be HRW Director of Outreach and Public Education, Andrea Hawley, who's also the manager of their traveling Film Fest. Then we'll revisit drag from a king perspective with drag event organizer Eliza Shapiro. Eliza does drag under the name of Haywood Wakefield, and we'll catch up with Haywood and Eliza on the way to a performance. And as long as we're playing catch up, we'll also have the Twisted Nasty News, Question of the Week, and much more tonight on Gender Talk. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Gender Talk. How are y'all doing tonight? Hope you're having a good Monday evening out there. I know everybody in the Boston area is feeling that cold wind blowing down from the north, and we're back into the frigid winter.
It came back.
Oh, yeah. Didn't it? With a vengeance.
It got above freezing, and we had wind chills above zero, and I got used to it for a day.
Exactly.
I never thought that I'd be thinking that 30 or 40 is beach weather.
Does alter your perspective, yeah. Doesn't
Bring
it?
Out the T-shirt.
That's right. We got two Southerners on this show. Two two ex-Southerners.
Hey, you're never an ex-Southerner.
There you go. Hey, everybody. So, let's see. Let's do our little intros. I'm, of course, Nancy and Gordine McKenzie. All right.
And the one complaining about the weather was Hal Fuller, the engineer and frostbite victim.
And it's me, Karen. I've got, like, little things to play with.
Shake.
Karen Larson. Yeah. All right. Hey, everybody. It's great to be back here in the saddle again. As always, we've got a full and a good show lined up for you. Human Rights Watch. This is an organization that's been around since the 70s, and they've been doing terrific work. But we've never talked with them here on Gender Talk, and so this will be our first time. And they have this international film festival that was in Boston for the third time. It took us 3 years to wake up to this. But they're in Boston for the third time this year. They've been here all this last weekend and the four evenings this week, including tonight. So we're going to talk with the person who does, who's the head of outreach and head of this film festival at Human Rights Watch. So this should be cool.
And we had a chance to preview three of the films that were astounding. They really change your consciousness. You are definitely forever changed after viewing them.
I read a good write-up in one of the papers about this festival. Yeah. They were saying, well, if you're getting really bored with the regular kind of crap that's out there,
yeah, I think
you're
that's
saved.
The right word for it. Yes. You know, last week we urged you all, you know, if you're at all interested, get your tickets and go see it because this is quality films, although at the time we hadn't seen any of them, but now we've seen several. And very, very impressive work.
Yeah, we had just read about
it. We did see Georgia Girl. Anyway, we'll talk about it all later on in the show, so stay with us. Our guest will be Andrea Hawley, so that'll be great. And then we're going to talk with Eliza Shapiro, who has been running drag king and drag events here in Boston, I think for 8 years, is it? Something like that. And Eliza is also very well informed on the whole subject area, and that should also be fascinating.
And is also a drag king, Haywood Wakefield.
That's right.
And who I believe Eliza will be Haywood Wakefield when we talk to Haywood or Eliza.
Yeah, we don't know. I guess if there'll be a persona or what, but I'm sure Eliza will be Eliza some, maybe Haywood some. We'll see what
That'd
happens.
That'd be great.
But, yeah. So we're looking forward to that.
Maybe
so.
A whole new third personality will emerge. Yeah.
You never know.
You know, our hope is to be creative here on the air, so maybe we can create some new personage there.
You know, it's interesting that drag kings have really been sort of nipping away at the stages that the drag queens have been on for such a long time. And now they're regular fare at Jacques, I understand.
Yeah. I was surprised to see it. I'm so out of touch, I guess. I didn't know that was going on.
It's a very different culture.
Yeah. Things have changed, and that's great for all of us. Change is a good thing, and You know, each generation kind of, or not just each generation, every few years there's a new wave, you know, of something different, and people find new ways to express themselves and to get out and have a good time.
I thought we were the new wave.
No, I'm afraid not.
I think we're just the old age.
No, I
wouldn't
say that
either. The old puddle.
I think we still got some vibrancy going on here. I don't think we're done.
Hey, I think we've got some high waves
so
coming.
We had a really good time Wednesday night. Last Wednesday night we hosted one of the evenings of the MIT Transgender Film Festival, mm-hmm. and we really enjoyed it immensely.
Two films, Ma Vie and Rose and Different for Girls. And each time I look at the films, I always notice something. And there was a really good turnout, very diverse audience that had really multiple readings of the film, which was very exciting. They pulled out things I hadn't even
Yeah, it was fascinating. We posed some questions to the audience before we saw
really
the films, and then they had some great feedback and great observations
for us.
So
there were great conversations.
Fascinating. And, of course, the last night of that film festival is tonight. Right now, Shinjuku Boys and... what was the other movie that's showing?
You Don't Know Dick.
You Don't Know Dick. That's right. Thanks,
Thank
Hal.
Thank you.
Yeah, those two films are showing tonight here
so,
at MIT.
So tape Gender Talk and get out and go see the films.
Yeah, put on your tape recorder. Do it. And get out there and go see those films.
I think they're free, too.
Yeah, it's
they are.
I think it's building 35, room 255,
and you'll have
discussants like
and people that introduce the films that can kind of tie you into what the films
exactly.
are.
Exactly. And then, of course, in February, we're going to have a panel, but we'll tell you all again about that before that happens. But, I was surprised at what a pleasure it was to both to host the films and to have the conversation afterwards. I had thought when we signed up to do it, like, we'll do this, but, you know, probably nobody will have much to say, and everybody leave, nobody hang around and talk, but everybody stayed and talked, and it was fascinating. It was really a great evening, great event.
Yeah.
Speaking of events, Gordine and I are just coming from...
A funeral. And a wake yesterday.
A little different, yeah. My aunt and godmother passed away.
Marcella
Serafina. On last Wednesday, and she'll be missed.
She was a really very
we learned
tough,
something about Marcy
woman.
Today.
Is this I want to hear the Brooks story?
Well, she had opened a restaurant in Boston.
No, she hadn't opened it, actually. It was her husband's restaurant, her husband's chicken, and when he died, she took it
she
over
took
and
it
ran
over
it for another 25
it.
Years.
Yeah.
She was very successful, and
independent.
She ended up being quite a... what's the word when somebody's generous and gives money? Philanthropist.
Yep.
She did very well for herself and was able to be very generous to various communities and to family members and such.
She's very opinionated and a real delight to be around.
Yeah, she's very opinionated, and I can't say I always liked her politics, but for the most part, she's good.
First time I met her, she said, "Please, can we talk Italian with each other?" Every time I'd see her, she'd
she
come
wanted
up to
talk
me.
Italian with Gordine so that I wouldn't know what they were saying. Anyway, but she's great. But so here's the story. We just heard this today for the first time.
Wild. Wait a minute. You don't speak Italian, do you?
No.
I know a few Sicilian words that we say, and that's about it.
So let's see. So this a friend of the family and Mark, a good friend
funeral.
Of hers. So we're at the funeral, and he's up in front talking about her and tells a story about how she was living in this apartment in a home that was sort of like lightly assisted living, I'd call it. And apparently there had been some young teenage boys or something who were preying on old senior citizens.
Stealing their purses.
And so Marcy said, well, they're not going to get my purse. I'm going to put a brick in it. And she did. And they tried. And she hit him with the purse. And they didn't get
hit him on the head with a brick.
She put a brick in her purse and she nailed
and
the guy.
And that really sums
her.
Up Auntie Marcy in
it
a
really
lot
does.
Of ways.
You know
it?
What? It's the
that?
Old saying. Truth is stranger than fiction. If somebody put that in a movie,
you wouldn't believe it.
No.
Or you'd say, oh, that's great for a movie, but, you know, in reality, that would never happen. But it really did.
Yeah, it really
was my
did.
Aunt. She did it. And, you know, who knows what all the details are. But
that's right.
Well, you learn something every day. What a great story. Yeah, Marcy was quite a character. We'll miss you, Marcy. Thank you for the good years. And she left everyone a lot of love. And that was a great thing to do.
Yeah, she left a note to everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, saying,
which
I wish I could leave you more, you know, I wish I could leave you wisdom, more wisdom and courage and more resources, you know, to lead your lives with, but I do leave you a whole lot of love.
Yeah.
So it's quite a nice way to leave leave this earth.
How old was she?
98.
Marcy was, no, 97.
Was it 97? She would be 98 February.
Yeah, she was approaching her 98th birthday.
And she was very lucid and very intelligent.
This woman was like, had everything scripted out. She knew what she wanted to be wearing when she was buried.
She already had her tombstone card.
She had her tombstone engraved 2 years before.
Yeah.
She had her name added to the tombstone of her late husband, whom she adored, and wanted to be buried, wanted to rest beside. So, quite a character. Anyway.
Yes, that was.
Shall we go on? Oops, I get something in my throat.
Because that's the kind of stock you come from. I think we'll go on to the question of the week. And this week, our question is, I am a female who has never felt right with my body. I was very confused when I was younger because I have always been attracted to men, but never exactly felt like a woman. I identify with that.
This is a long one. So,
some levels. Yeah. I am extremely feminine and never really had a desire to have masculine affectations. It is the body that I do not like. This has caused me much confusion. I have always had a particular attraction to gay men, effeminate gay men, and it is only very recently that I have made the realization that I don't have a problem with being feminine, just with being female. I have endlessly searched for literature on women who want to be gay men, but have come up with nothing. Is it really all that rare? Any advice? Recommended reading? Could you tell me what the statistics are? I have never been through much trouble.
No, I have been through.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have been through much trouble over my discomfort with my body, as everyone I have ever spoken to about my situation has been hell-bent on thinking I am just ashamed of my body because I must have been abused, or I am just too fat, or something, which is why it has taken me 30 years to come to the true nature of my problems. Is that the way it always is? And this is from Jill.
I say, Jill, shut up and stop whining.
Ooh,
Karen's so harsh.
It's like, I've made notes. It's like, well, I've always liked gay men. Yeah, there's a word for it, fag hag.
But now that's an interesting word. I mean, think about that, because then that kind of indicates that women that like gay men have something wrong with them, that it would be wrong for women to be attracted to gay men.
Now, I never took that as, bad, because I always thought it was funny. It's like they associate hags with witches.
Yeah.
Now, what's wrong with that?
No, good. And you saw that as powerful, but some people who might take the word, I think, the wrong way may see that as negative. I see that as empowering.
Now, why I say this is that she's like, it's never like I've been abused or I'm too heavy. And I'm, what does being abused or weight or anything have to do with being ashamed of your body? It's all...
Yeah.
It may be connected, it may not.
Yeah.
Somebody who's anorexic could be embarrassed about their...
I think there's a presumption that people who are heavy don't like their bodies, you know?
Which isn't true.
It's a false presumption, but I think there is that presumption. That's a very good point.
Well, and she has an issue around her body that she doesn't like, and she does talk about being attracted to gay men, but effeminate gay men. And, I mean, is she saying on some level that maybe she identifies as a gay man?
Yeah, so that's the interesting thing.
See, now also, too, do you remember when we had Leo on?
Yeah,
Leo Stahlweg.
Yeah, now Leo, for everybody that didn't catch Leo, is female-to-male transsexual,
yep,
who started off as, like, a female studies person and was appalled when he started all of a sudden realizing that he went from being attracted to women to being attracted to men.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
And had a male partner, so...
But was attracted to men as a man.
Man.
And FTM as opposed to...
And he said he was appalled at the fact that he was actually starting to look at people once the male hormones were kicking in.
Yeah.
And what's...
And it was men that were turning him on?
Well, that too, but he was also looking at body parts instead of the person.
Okay. Yeah, interesting.
Well, there's also another side.
Even with a feminist consciousness.
Yes, that's what I was trying to hear.
Yeah.
Does Jill have any inclination that she might be female to male? That isn't indicated by...
That certainly comes to mind.
I say she because we have no indication that that's true.
She doesn't say anything like that, that she identifies as being male. Doesn't she say that she likes being female?
She says, but she never felt exactly like a woman. She's been attracted to men, but she's attracted primarily to effeminate gay men.
But she searched the literature for women who want to be gay men.
Exactly.
So I think that has to be the statement of who she is. She's somebody who wants to be a gay man, because that's
or
what she
searched
for.
Or maybe she feels, and I think that there are a lot of people whose identity is all across the map. And I know a lot of women who have felt themselves to be gay men, and I know a lot of women who have never felt themselves to be females. They might have been feminine, but there's this kind of split. And we have to remember the way that the culture negotiates the female body, like in advertising and the messages that are women continually get, that many women don't feel quite at home in their body because of the images that are presented to them.
And women and men both.
Even though images on being female may not be aren't always consistent, because you've got the spiritual, I'm the earth mother type thing, and then the femnikita.
Yeah.
You know, and I even know some F2M individuals that are quite effeminate. They are effeminate men.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Just as there are some butch MTS.
We just confused at least like several people in the audience by that.
No, and I think that's important. And the male part of myself that I've always recognized is very much a femme male part. It's definitely not been Sylvester Stallone.
This sounds a lot to me like a female to male kind of person.
Although we don't want to push her into a category.
But when she says she searched for literature on women who want to be gay men, that's like I was a man who wanted to be a lesbian woman. That's one way of looking at who I am and what I was. And there's lots of gay FTMs out there. So
Jill
it's not
also
unusual.
Said that she had no problem with being feminine, just being female. Yeah. Now, that sounds like a statement of a transsexual by most statements by transsexuals that I've heard.
Well, that's like I have no trouble with being butch. It was maleness that was problematic for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. So, we definitely don't want Jill to be, like, influencing you here, but we do want to, anytime anybody writes us a letter like this, what we want to say is, you know what, just try to be yourself.
And that's a really important thing, Jill. I grew up thinking that I really should have been a boy, and from the time I was 5 years old until the time I was 35 years old, I struggled about feeling like I was in the wrong body. And finally, I had a visionary experience where I realized that, and this is just for myself, that I had the good fortune to have been born into the woman's body and was really a drag queen, and that everything was okay and I could sign a peace treaty with my body. That was the way that I kind of resolved things. And my gender moves all over the map, and I'm comfortable with my gender kind of roving around and moving around the map. But what Nancy said, to just find your place of comfort, is really important and should be underscored, because it doesn't matter what other people have felt. It's what you felt and where you feel at home. And also, there are people that you can talk to, because there are people that have varieties of experiences.
And when I was first trying to find myself before I got involved and out, people basically responded to me kind of like it sounds like they're responding to you. I would say, well, you know, I'm attracted to women, but I kind of want to be feminine myself. And so people say, what, you want to be a woman to be with women? That's crazy. And
but
it sounds like that's kind of what they're saying.
People not understanding the difference between sex and gender. And the whole notion that sex is the biological determination based on genital assignment, if you're female or male, and gender being everything else, whether you're a woman, a man, an in-between, a tranny, or any other.
We still come back to all of the old sexual stereotypes. If you have a penis, you must be attracted to women. If you have a vagina, you must be attracted
to
men.
That's sure heteronormativity, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the default.
Or even that, without the attraction, that if you're a penis, you must be a man.
There we go. Well, Kate Bornstein says she knows too many women with that determination to say that that's always the case.
Or if you're born female and you have transgender, you have transgender inclinations, you must be FTM. That's not even necessarily true. And if you're born male and you have transgender inclinations, you're MTF. That's not necessarily true. You know, we're going to find that there are going to be people who will find new ways of expressing their own gender and
ways
sexuality.
Ways that we never even dreamed
of. They'll blaze new trails, and you know, there'll be people out there identifying next year, tomorrow, next week, in ways that we haven't thought of, and you might be one of them, Jill. So good luck with that, and have fun.
And I always say there's at least 50 billion galaxies of gender, and we've just approached the first ones.
Bottom line, have fun.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for your question, Jill. Send your question to gendertalk.com, and we will regale you with our brilliance on it.
Or baffle you with the... No, I won't finish that one.
Thank you, Hal. By the way, Peter Choice is sitting here in the studio. Hey, Peter.
How you doing,
Petey?
Stop in, say hi.
Good to see you.
See, now you're going to call him Petey Pie, too.
Petey Pie? Yeah. He's stealing Hal's microphone.
I always felt that one penis wasn't enough.
Oh, wow.
You wanted more than one.
Yeah, like three.
Okay, we'll work on that. What was the song, Detachable Penis by King Missile?
Right.
I like that song.
King
That's
Missile.
A fun one.
That's too much.
Anyway, I think it's time now for Hal Fuller.
And the Gender Talk Twisted Nasty News.
Yay!
Okay, some good news. From Washington, D.C., the Human Rights Campaign today applauded the decision of the Justice Department to grant compensation from a federal fund created for the victims of September 11th attacks to Peggy Neff, who lost her partner Sheila Hine in the attack on the Pentagon. Unlike victims in New York who were eligible for state-level survivor benefits, neither Virginia nor federal law made any provisions for non-married partners. This is the first time we are aware of the federal government has specifically recognized that someone in a gay relationship should receive compensation for the loss of a partner, said HRC Communications Director and Senior Strategist David Smith.
Yeah, that's a great thing. So finally, I remember after 9/11 that there was a question about gay partners and whether they were going to get benefits. And here's a lesbian couple where there were benefits awarded. I think that there are probably many, many instances of such partnerships where there have not been benefits awarded. So the fact that in this one case there were benefits, this does not mean that everything's okay. What this is the tip of the iceberg of justice. It's just the first step. So let's not let this lull us into thinking, okay, everything's okay now. This is the first step, okay? But it's a good first step.
It's setting the precedent then.
That's right.
Hopefully
that's a very
so.
Good one.
That'd be great.
So everyone has to do it on a case-by-case basis to, like, prove that they were really lovers or something?
Don't know. Don't know how it'll play out. But hopefully this will open the door.
Well, speaking of opening or closing some doors, and speaking of progress and lack thereof, from the Vatican again, Pope John Paul II warned Sunday against, quote, inauthentic versions of the family.
Inauthentic.
Inauthentic. Stressing that a union between a man and a woman was the only true one in God's eyes.
That's really nasty.
Well, this is why when I sat at that funeral service today, I just could not participate.
Because your friend was 98 and you said lucid.
97, yeah.
And now the Pope.
She was authentic.
Right. We have no
our
proof
family
that
is authentic. Even though we have people of all kinds, we have lesbian couples in our family.
Yeah.
We have tranny couples in our family.
Nancy and I are there.
Yeah. I'm saying, though,
our family is authentic. Yeah. I'm sorry.
And right up to the very end, you would declare that she was lucid and was able to think clearly.
Yeah.
Now, we have this Pope saying stuff that I'm just wondering, has anyone ever done a test on his lucidity?
Not recently. He also said it is certainly not that inauthentic one, talking about non-traditional marriage and bonding. It's certainly not that inauthentic one based on individual egotism, quote unquote. Experience has shown that such a caricature.
This is caricature, he's calling.
Has no future and can give no future to any society.
I see. Meanwhile, however, a priesthood in which there are over 1,000 instances, 1,000 different practitioners of pederasty in the priesthood. That priesthood, however, is not a caricature of spirituality. Excuse me.
I think that there are many Catholics, though, in all fairness, that do not buy it.
Right. And also, his whole statement is he's still on the harping that the world has 6 billion people and he thinks we should still produce. What if he was a man of God, why doesn't he think, well, maybe God is making more homosexuals to try to level out the population?
Yeah, good point.
That goes
Pope ain't that smart,
basic
though.
Catholic
plea, you know what?
Go ye forth and multiply.
The world is
looking
moving in a good
members,
direction.
Folks.
We're seeing more activism. 59% of the people now are saying they're against the war. We need
59%? Is that the latest?
Yes, that's the
and
latest.
And I hear they're having riots in London because they're sending the English people.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff happening. Cool. It's time for a resurgence of Planned Parenthood and the notion of some form of population, if not control, at least some moderation of population growth. Its time has come. This was defeated. I don't know who defeated this, but this is something that we really need to seriously consider, I think. And I think it's time for us to take up this yet another banner. I think this is an important one.
Well, there is an old, time-tested, tried method of population control, and our administration is urging us to use war in exactly that way right now.
Yeah. We should try Pope control.
You're right. What was I thinking? What was I thinking? He's right on it. Thank you, George Bush.
Yay, rah. And speaking of politicians, when Fred Petty ran for the Petrie ran for the city council in Charleston, West Virginia, he listed his party affiliation as Democart. D-E-M-O-C-A-R-T. Democart.
Yeah, that's what you send in when you're like, you know, you want
you're trying
somebody
to get a job. Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Now that his term is up, the Democrat has filed his papers for re-election, and sure enough, he listed himself as a Democrat again. Three others running for seats also spelled their party affiliation that same way, or as Democrate, C-R-A-T-E. But fear not, opponents that, on the
that's
other...
That's what you do with dead Democrats. You Democrate them.
But you don't desecrate them.
That's right. Sorry.
If it's any consolation, opponents on the other side of the political fence also have difficulty spelling Republican. Al Kerry said he was kind of rushed. I was trying to beat the deadline when he listed his affiliation as Rep. Bullican. Huh. And one of his party mates listed himself as a Repusecan.
Typo?
A Repusecan?
Well, it's hard to have a typo when you're writing it out loud.
Seeking a reputation, yes. Like it.
So love those politicians.
Well, we're hoping that the Democratic Party is going to wake up.
What about our Democratic senator that was so pro-war with Iraq? Now he's stepping back from that, too.
Who are you talking about?
What's Kerry?
Kerry?
Yeah.
Well, that's fortunately, good. We have Ted Kennedy is speaking up. I applaud what he's been saying lately. But
lately, has he been saying it all along, or are they going whichever way the wind blows?
No, he's been saying
he's been fairly consistent.
Time.
Really?
Kennedy's been good.
Ooh.
Yeah.
He's one of the last of those people who admit unashamedly that he's a right. Liberal. Okay, some good news from New York. 17-year-old male living in a foster care may dress as a woman according to a state court. Supreme Court Justice Louise Gans ruled last Thursday the city had violated the teen's rights when the Atlantic Transitional Foster Facility, a city-run home, prohibited him from wearing dresses and skirts. This is in New York.
Earl Lipscomb case. This is a different one.
I believe so.
Wow.
Representative, the teen whose name was withheld because of his age identifies himself as a female. He's been diagnosed with a gender identity. I think this is another case.
Wonderful. So, a child in foster care, you need to listen to their gender identity. You need to listen to their assertions on their gender and respect it or else.
To Supreme Court Judge Louise Gans of New York State.
Wonderful.
Representatives of the foster care facility had argued that the teen wore sexually provocative women's clothing in an all-male home. So it was his fault again. Or it wasn't his fault. It was that other people would respond to him, and he should have been segregated out in that all-tranny car that they're setting up.
Young girls
wear sexually provocative clothing.
To dress and kind of find yourself, and I'm not going to weigh in pro or con on either, but it happens.
But there was a young girl we saw this weekend who was wearing very short skirt.
And I wore mini dresses.
I wonder how the other boys were dressing for each other. Since it was an issue.
Oh, Peter.
He's walking around in his underpants. He's provocative of me. Provoking me.
And if you wonder what you're listening to, this is Gender Talk on WNBR in Cambridge.
Thank you.
And final story since a couple of quick ones, actually. Well, you know that they've been using Botox, which is basically the toxin for...
Botulism.
They've been using it on wrinkles because it kind of kills the nerve endings and makes the face relax.
And you can't have as many expressions anymore.
Right.
What is botulism?
They're using the Botox. They're injecting it into people's faces.
Botulism is something really bad.
It's a poisonous reaction to food, more or less.
Yeah, botulism is what you get from bad food. Yeah.
Anyway, you can use botulism. Botoxin, shoot it into your armpits, kill your sweat glands, and you don't smell as bad.
Oh, God, you know what?
It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
You know what?
What else will they find as a use for it? Oh, boy.
You know
I can't
what? If you kill yourself and lay still, your clothes won't get dirty. How about that? Wow.
And then you won't have any lines anymore.
None of that. Eventually, your hair and fingernails will stop growing and you won't have to cut them anymore. Oh,
yeah,
boy.
That's pretty scary.
Let's kill off our bodies one little bit at a time because we can't stand nature's design.
Yeah.
That is so sad. You know what? You know, humans.
It all began with the deodorant industry, which came into being after World War II.
Yeah.
Right? Had to learn. This whole thing about antiperspirant, you had to stop your body from doing what it's supposed to do.
Well, that was just an advance on perfumes, though. Perfume's been around forever, and that's a way of covering up. You know, so
but
they become more effective.
You don't have it. You don't wear deodorant. No. And you know what? I think after 43 years, I don't really smell because I didn't train my body to, like, need this chemical.
Yeah.
So it's all subjective, bad smell, good smell.
Exactly.
Not completely subjective.
Well, the other thing is you very quickly adjust to odors. So the notion that your personal body odor is a problem is kind of silly.
Yeah, we should all smell like wood.
Yeah.
I like the smell of wood.
And we all smell differently.
Did you do the disclaimer? You're listening. This is WMBR in Cambridge?
Yes,
we have it on DigiCart now.
No, that's the ID, the disclaimer
is
when you say whatever he said, we don't agree with. We'll do that one later.
Yeah.
Okay, the final story you've all been waiting for, and if you thought religion was getting silly, television is getting silly in a religious way.
Mm-mm.
According to the Assist News Service, there's going to be a new internet reality game show to find ordinary people to play 12 Bible characters. It got underway last Friday. More than 300 people have applied. Created by shipoffools.com, The Ark, it's called, is a 3D sim world with the look and feel of a computer game, and basically 12 biblical heroes and villains played by contestants in their own homes will spend up to 2 hours each day battling it out in front of a worldwide web audience for the right to step onto Mount Ararat and win a cash prize.
Oh, please.
You know
Christianity
what?
And capitalism.
Who is your favorite biblical character, though? Like, if you could collect them all, like, who would be your favorite?
The jawbone of the ass. That was my favorite character.
You know, I'm sorry. I spend enough time in front of my computer as it is. You could not pay me to spend another 2 hours a week in front of my computer.
Oh, I would just love to be Lazarus for a moment, just to raise from the dead.
I like the fallen angels. They always had the best outfits.
Well, if you're interested, Mary Magdalene is just ahead of Job as the most popular character in The Ark.
Oh, please.
Followed by Esther. And
everybody wants to give birth but not experience sexual pleasure.
You think that's what...
Oh, Mary Magdalene.
That's why?
Mary Magdalene.
Magdalene. Oh, she was the whore, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. No, I take it back.
Oh, I get confused.
Well,
I got the whole holy family.
The two leading women in the Bible, they were both named Mary, and you could confuse them easily.
That set up the virgin-whore dichotomy, which we are still trying to recover from, folks.
All right.
Well, the virgin-whore dichotomy is a corruption of the maiden-crone. Which is
powerful.
Which is powerful.
Interesting.
And we miss out on the triple goddess. Then.
Because
it is.
It's a degrading culture because it's a culture. It's a domineering culture, and in order to live with the guilt, we have to degrade.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so that's why we have to
instead
degrade.
Instead of celebrate the different cycles where you have
the virgin that is desirable but hasn't been with the man.
Then
and
we have
the whore that
woman,
is still desirable,
then we go
but
to the wise woman. But then Christianity takes it all and degrades it.
That's a subject for another show. And this is
the
Gender Talk Twisted Nasty News. Take only as directed.
Thank you. Boy, did we get up into
we took a left turn.
I like Goliath. He was big.
Oh, no.
In case anybody's wondering, the views and opinions presented on this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. They probably do, but, you know, they don't necessarily. No,
that's
kidding.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, it's time for our first guest.
I believe we have our first guest. Andrea Holly, who is the Director of Outreach and Public Education at Human Rights Watch, and Andrea is the manager of the Human Rights Watch International Film Festival's Traveling Festival. And as we said earlier, Nancy and I viewed three of those films, and they were life-changing. They were absolutely dynamic. Thank you for joining us tonight, Andrea.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome to Gender Talk.
Andrea, could we start out with what is Human Rights Watch?
Sure. Human Rights Watch is an international human rights monitoring and advocacy organization with our main offices in New York. And as I was explaining to a lot of people who attended the films, for us, monitoring and advocacy essentially means that we send researchers into the field, that includes the United States, and then they write up their research in the form of reports and press releases. And the advocacy we focus on is both press-related, i.e. trying to get our information and reports into the mainstream media, as well as direct lobbying of various U.S. bodies at Congress, the United Nations system, and different member governments of the United Nations system.
Wow. So you actually sponsor original research?
Absolutely.
And then you sponsor the creation of reports, and then you also sponsor the delivery of these reports to government agencies and lobbying those agencies with the reports?
Right.
Wow, that's terrific.
Andrea, some of your goals are dedicated, isn't it, to protecting the human rights of people around the world?
That's right.
Yeah.
Especially we have discovered over the years that one of the key elements to our work is, in fact, collaborating with local non-governmental organizations in various places, once again, including the United States. I just want to keep reiterating that, I guess. But I would say that...
Well, we don't have human rights abuses.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Our prisons aren't the most populous in the world.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that originally, Human Rights Watch actually started in 1978, and the first body was Helsinki Watch, which focused on the Soviet Union and the various Soviet bloc states. And the model at that time was very much about giving a voice to the voiceless, because there was such a block or a severance in communication between various peoples and various states. Nowadays, I think because of the advent of various internet and communications technologies, the concept of giving a voice to the voiceless, for me, seems a bit outdated. So I think what we strive for now is standing with various groups and individuals against violations and abuses, both by state entities like governments, as well as standing against violations by various private and corporate entities.
I think standing with is a nice model, too, because
like
it also honors and respects the original voices, the voices of those people who are being affected.
Exactly.
And not putting us in as saviors again.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, terrific.
Great.
Okay. And can I jump right to the film festival? Because
right,
that's such a great thing.
Sure.
It's what a... I mean, everybody loves movies. And, you know, we all like television, if not for the... If it weren't for the lousy programming, we would all love television. Maybe. But film is really a powerful medium, isn't it?
Yes, yes. I think there are a couple aspects I always focus on for me personally. The two things about film that I think we have learned over the years is that there is definitely a difference between images and text. Yeah. I'll be quite direct in that Human Rights Watch is a very text-heavy organization for a variety of reasons based on the type of research we do. But increasingly, and Human Rights Watch isn't the only organization focusing on this, images, both in the form of photo, video, etc., have become much more prominent in the work, to the point that we have submitted videos as testimony in front of the major human rights commissions in Geneva.
Wonderful. Mm.
As a direct form of legitimate interview testimony,
great,
rather than just text reports.
Well, we all saw with Rodney King how powerful a video can be.
Exactly, and that video actually indirectly gave rise to another human rights organization people may know of, which is Witness, which actually delivers cameras to human rights organizations in various countries.
Really?
Yeah.
No, see, I didn't know about this.
And does that put the cameras in the hands of the population, or how does that work?
Yeah, their system is such that they give the cameras to organizations in various countries, and then they train them in various methodologies how to use the cameras.
Wonderful.
And distinctly in deciding sort of what kind of piece you want to make. Not everybody wants to make a film.
Yeah.
Some people want to actually tape interview testimony. Mm-hmm. Some people want to make a public service announcement. And I think the thing that differentiates the work that Witness does and something like the film festival, which sort of brings me back to the second aspect of the film thing, the films are stories. And most often they're stories about a particular individual or family that illustrates on a very personal level, a broader human rights issue. I think the example I always give is in, let's see, I'm not sure which films you all were interested in discussing.
We'll discuss anything,
and,
it's okay.
Afghanistan and Georgie Girl.
Those are the ones we've seen, but we're happy to talk about any of the films.
Yeah, Gaza Strip, I'll just take as an example. I think that for a lot of us, the media is full of different blanket reports and statements, and for those of us who maybe have read other things, there are even statistics. But in this film, the child who's in the film recounts very specific incidents of having a friend being shot, or we see another scene where there's a mother and a daughter discussing, particularly the mother recounts how their house was bulldozed. That individual story is much different than reading about in the newspaper, as some of us may have read today, how troops are moving into Gaza City because there's a 12-person house who's making bombs. And I mean, all these things, none of us are there, who knows. But I just would say that in the films, the chance to have a voice, people are speaking in their own voice, as you may have noticed in Gaza Strip. There's no narration. No. There's no experts.
And let me share with our listeners, just to fill them in a little bit, on the Gaza Strip film. The boy we're talking about is one of those rock throwers. You know how you've seen in the news, boys throwing rocks at the tanks. And you hear the voice of one of these boys who's been throwing rocks, and he talks about how his friend
was trying to get a piece of copper.
Trying to get a piece of copper because they're desperately poor. These are 13-year-old boys who are having to work to support their families because their fathers have been arrested and imprisoned by the Israelis. And these young boys drop out of school at a very early age and are having to work to support the families. So they're a bit angry. But anyway, he talks about his friend who is trying to get a piece of copper, like a 1-pound piece of copper or so, because that would be worth something to them, that was close to a tank. And at first they shot at the young boy, and then they actually shot him through the head.
And
he, of course, died. And this boy talks about having his very best friend shot like that, and about his anger, and he says he will not stop throwing the rocks, and he will always throw the rocks at the Israelis. And they talk about,
and he carried his body.
And this is a 13-year-old boy. And these are boys who are not a threat to the Israelis. The rocks are not a threat. The boys are not a threat. And yet these boys are being dealt with deadly force.
Yeah.
And this force, I want to remind everybody, is supported by American money and American guns and American ammunition, American helicopters. And I'm sure there's American tanks. I know the Israelis make some tanks, but I'm sure there's American tanks there too.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is an important issue to all of us, and a movie like this just brings it home when you see the first-person account, which is what the news should be showing us, and they are not in our media.
Yeah.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah. I would just add, if I could just chime in on that note, part of the story behind Gaza Strip, the director, James Longley, is someone who has no real background in Arab studies, or, you know, he never was particularly focused on the Middle East. He's a classically trained filmmaker. Mm. His first film was about Russia. And he says in the interview, I can give our website reference later on. He says in the interview we did with him, I used to watch the television and watch these different journalists report from Tel Aviv or Jerusalem about this or that thing happening in Gaza City. And it's quite a distance in the sense that it's like kilometers away.
Sure.
And he said, I just asked myself one day, like, why are they not there? Where is that footage?
Yeah.
And he went.
Yes. Yeah. And it's dramatic footage that will change forever the way that everyone who sees this footage, it will change forever the way that you look at other newscasts and the way that you regard what's going on there. And rightly so. Mm. We need to be seeing both sides of the story. And we get lots of the Israeli side. We don't get the Palestinian side.
Yeah.
And we need to get it.
Yeah. And it's a very important point. And I have to tell you, an Israeli filmmaker said to us not so long ago, until the world accepts or hears or however you want to say, incorporates the Palestinian narrative of what happened from 1948 till now.
Yep.
The way they accept the Holocaust narrative or, you know, any other narrative. I mean,
sure.
We can make all kinds of comparisons to, I was just listening earlier when you all were discussing Mount Ararat. I mean, the Armenian genocide. Up until a few years ago, how much was that accepted as a narrative?
Yep. Yeah.
So there's this sort of discourse about accepting and understanding this kind of perspective and incorporating that into how we proceed next. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know either. I don't, you know, and I don't even know the story of the Armenian genocide. And we probably don't have time to cover it here tonight, but it's sad that I don't know that story.
Yeah, and on the website,
yeah.
though, you do have some stories listed. You have the latest news where people can go and read, and then you can go into past stories as well.
And it's hrw.org, everybody.
Right.
www.hrw.org is the website. But I want to a little bit more about these documentaries, because, for example, the Gaza Strip. Is there any way that people out there can see this documentary or any of the other films? I know that there are films being shown this week here in Boston, but what about somebody who's in Des Moines or, you know, Albuquerque? How can they see any of these very important films that are, you know, you watch a film like this for an hour and you get more information than if you read, you get more information than you'll ever get off of watching television news, and you have to read many books to get this kind of feel. How can people see these things?
Right. It's pretty direct reference through the website.
Okay.
When people visit hrw.org, there's a navigation bar. They can visit the film festival section, and each film that we have posted, the Boston schedule is up there right now. If you look at the film page for each one, we give what's called the distributor contact. The distributors are the people who control the films and, in fact, can sell or rent videos. Gaza Strip, I can tell you right now, you could rent it for a screening or buy it from a company called Arab Film Distribution. But all that information would be on the site so that people can directly contact these individuals themselves.
And are these things priced in such a way that individuals can afford? Now, we can't talk about prices, but can are they priced
or
like
small programs?
Yeah.
I would say yes. It depends, obviously. But most people have what's called an educational distributor, and the prices are somewhat more reasonable. I'll just put it like that.
Okay. Now, tonight, there's a film called Profit and Nothing But showing, two showings at the Coolidge Corner. They're probably both sold out. I don't know.
They added a third, FYI.
Oh, my gosh.
They didn't.
So you're really having a big attendance.
So far, yeah.
Wonderful.
I mean,
tell
us
about this film, because this looked fascinating. We haven't had a chance to see it. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Profit and Nothing But is by a director named Raoul Peck, who some people may remember because he actually directed the film Lumumba.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he is Haitian. And this film, interestingly enough, was commissioned by one of the cultural entities in France. And Raoul Peck made this film to analyze the situation in Haiti, but sort of using Haiti as a prism of the larger issues of globalization.
Yes.
The film has a very interesting style. It's very meditative. It includes narration by him, sort of reflecting on Haiti and his experiences growing up and then leaving. And various economists are interviewed in the film who have various political perspectives and comment on the market system and, interestingly, discuss capitalism and how so many aspects of capitalism these days are accepted as givens when, in fact, capitalism is a construct.
Yes.
That's right.
That's so important because in our culture, growing up in this culture, we are never outside of capitalism. We sort of take it for granted. It's sort of like the land we walk on.
Right.
And it's hard to question it.
Right.
Because it's destabilizing, and it's a little bit distressing to question it, and it's not unpatriotic. It's not you know, some terribly radical thing to question it.
Right.
It's a reasonable thing to do in a democracy.
Absolutely, and I think that for a lot of people, Profit and Nothing But, because it does use the country of Haiti, which I think in a lot of viewpoints is quite an extreme case of certain things. He adds a very philosophical, analytical layer to what is a very concrete, extreme situation of poverty. And at one point, I think one of the quotes that sticks with a lot of people is he says, I come from a country where intellectual discourse is a luxury.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
And those are the kind of things, you know, observations that flow through the film, contrasted with very deep economic analyses of market economy.
There's a book by Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the president of Haiti. I forget the name of the book, a wonderful little book that just talks about the situation there that is quite moving. Now, tomorrow night, you're showing the film Georgie Girl.
Right.
And
tell
this this is a film about Georgina Beyer. We have had a chance to see this one. Thank you.
It's not the original one from 1965?
No. Doesn't have anything to do with that except for a song.
Different
and,
people.
Yeah. And Georgie Girl is, as Nancy was saying, Georgina Byers, who is also an indigenous woman.
Yeah.
So the film really looks at some multiple issues in a very complex way. Would you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Well, one thing for those of the audience who attended yesterday, there were a couple screenings of Georgie Girl yesterday as well. I always tell people it's the happiest film in this year's Boston Festival.
Indeed it is. Very positive, uplifting film.
Yeah, not that there aren't certain moments in the film that are very challenging, I would say.
No, she talks about a lot of very, very intense issues that she confronted in her life.
Yeah.
I think I would say that part of the reason that we selected Georgie Girl is, in fact, that Georgina Byers' story, in my viewpoint, at many points during the film, there are parts of her story that are completely unrelated to her identity as both Maori or transsexual. The whole story in the film, Georgina recounts from her youth how she came out and moved to Wellington and had various experiences and the lifestyle there and worked in a cabaret. But then at some point in her life, like many people, she sort of bottomed out. You know, she sort of discusses how she got to a point where this just wasn't working anymore and decided to move out to this rural area and join this adult education program, which is sort of a classic story in a situation where there is a government that provides those kind of services.
Yes.
And she sort of took advantage of it and, like, made the most of it.
Sort of like a skills training program.
Yes.
And she'd even won an award for Best Actress prior to that, hadn't she? Yeah.
And she'd had this whole career as an entertainer and sings beautiful. I mean, you see...
Very talented.
There's beautiful archival footage in the film, I think.
Yes.
I thought so, too.
Of her and photographs, which are just amazing and really give you a sense of how she was and how she still is.
Yep.
But I think the other thing about her that I just found so compelling is, in both in her interview footage and with other people speaking about her, everyone says the same thing. She's just full of integrity. And, you know, you might have, for people who haven't seen the film, there's several interviews with people from this very, what they call redneck region in New Zealand, who just talk about how Georgina's the type of person who will just talk to you on the street and, you know, she doesn't care if you're the whatever bum in the street or you're the Queen of England or whatever. And I think there's something about being a very approachable, sincere human being in politics, which is really very compelling.
And they also talk about her integrity. They just, I mean, everyone there believes in her and trusts her, and she seems to be very honest. And there's clips of her speaking on the floor of the, is it the parliament? I'm not quite sure what they call it. Okay.
Right.
Speaking on the floor of the parliament. She's the only transsexual ever elected to a national office, folks.
Yeah.
And this is very inspiring. And she speaks on the floor of the parliament with such basic honesty about herself, who she is, where she's been, and she does it with such grace and eloquence that she, I think, inspires everyone there.
Just fascinating. And I would just chime in once again. At the end of the film, in
chime
the same
in. What do you mean? It's your interview.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
No, it's your interview. You don't have to chime in. I'm the one who should be chiming in.
Okay. I just wanted to jump in on that point because I also feel the thing that's so great to see in a film is she's also very honest and straightforward. At the end of the film, she speaks about kind of where she is now and how she's continuing. And the thing that I really appreciated at this particular point in the film is she talks about how she still goes to the gay parades and she's in there and she's on that float.
That's
and
right.
Some of her electorate doesn't really care for that. But she's like, this is who I am. This is the basis on which I was elected. They know that. I owe so much to my family in that world. And, you know, she's very straightforward about this is who I am. And I'm not just going to, like, after all my successes or however you want to put it, just say, oh, bye, later for you people.
I mean, I'm not going to govern myself by what effect it might produce in terms of my well-being. I'm going to do what's right.
But she continues the tradition, too, that she talks about her mentor, Carmen, and she brings Carmen into things. And one of the things that was really interesting, it was the constituency that asked her to run first, was it for commission, and then as mayor, and then for nationally elected office.
Yeah,
they came to her repeatedly.
Yeah, and at first she was, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do it. But because she was such a mover and a shaker, and because she believed so much in what she was doing and had the power to do such good stuff, she came.
Great stuff.
Yeah,
very good film. Very strong character. And just, you know, someone who I think a lot of people can look to as inspiration on a number of levels.
Yeah.
And I like the way she also talked about being Maori and realizing at a late date, because it was seen like Native Americans are seen and other indigenous people. It was seen as something to be ashamed of.
Yep.
And so people tried to cover it up with the Eurocentrism. And when she recovered her indigenous heritage, she's very proud of it, and she brought that right with her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great thing.
Really, really wonderful.
Let's see. Okay. I'm just handed a note here. stuff. Let's talk about... Okay, so Georgia Girl is showing tomorrow
night.
So
is Afghanistan, which we had just...
No.
Isn't it?
So it, no, this was... This is over. This is what's happening this week here. Georgia Girl is tomorrow night at 7 to 9 p.m. And then the following night, there's The Last Judgment. Let's go through... Should we do this? Should we go through what's going to show this week, Andrea, for the people who still have a chance to see some of these
shows?
Sure,
that might be nice, yeah. if that's okay.
Yeah, Wednesday... So Georgia Girl tomorrow night at Coolidge Corner. Call them up right now and get yourself... It's in their screening room, not in the regular theater.
Right.
That's small.
There's only like 48 seats or something, so it's a great place to see a film. So give them a call. I'm sorry I don't have their number here. If you have it, you're welcome to give it, Andrea.
Sure.
And then tomorrow night, The Last Just Man, what's that about?
Let me just say very quickly, the Coolidge Corner, everybody who wants to check out these films, their website is very easy. It's www.coolidge.org. And then their phone number is 617-734-2501. 617-734-2501.
Great.
Last Just Man. Wow. Okay, talk about contrast from Georgina. The Last Just Man, which actually screened this weekend, so some people may have had a chance to catch it, is the story of General Romeo Dallaire, who was the head of the UN forces in Rwanda in 1994.
Oh. And this is the place where there were an enormous number of people killed.
Yeah.
Like 800,000?
800,000 is the standard.
Hatcheted to death.
Estimate.
Not shot.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is going to be one of the worst massacres since World War II.
Right.
Wow. So, yeah, okay.
And it's an extremely well-done documentary in that it includes extensive interviews with Romeo Dallaire himself, and sometimes when I describe the film to people, they're like, oh, wow, does that make it boring? It couldn't be more interesting.
Mm.
It's shot in such a way that, you know, you're quite close to his face, so the emotions just come right through the screen as he's speaking about what happened. And the other thing about this film that I really feel very strongly about is it's one of the least graphic films about Rwanda I've ever seen.
Really?
It has certain key shots and key images, and the rest is left up to your mind.
Mm.
And I think all of us, I've often felt that one of the strong points of many films is leaving these gaps in the actual image for your imagination to fill in, because that's so powerful.
I don't know. I don't think we've seen enough of Rwanda.
Yeah, I was wondering if any footage actually exists. I don't remember ever. I remember hearing and reading about it.
I've never seen any.
There's a couple of films I can give reference to if people are interested that are quite...
Oh, please do.
There's a particular film called Chronicle of a Genocide Foretold. Mm. It's now distributed by the National Film Board of Canada, if people are interested. And it's over a 2.5-hour film documenting what happened in Rwanda.
Foretold is the operative word, because now it's coming out that these machetes were ordered from Western countries, and everybody knew that this was going to blow. And
that's what's in The Last Just Man.
Yeah.
In The Last Just Man, you actually, the camera examines fax copies that went back and forth between Kigali in Rwanda and the UN headquarters in New York. And there's some pretty appalling exchanges.
Pretty incriminating.
We need to start holding our leaders accountable for letting these things happen. I mean, there's people out there, there's people in positions who know that this is happening who are not talking who should be. We need to start holding people accountable.
Yeah.
All right, The Last Just Man sounds very intense.
Yeah.
Okay, very worthwhile. Okay, and then finally, 7 days in Tehran.
7 days.
This is this Thursday night.
Right, Thursday at 7 and 9. And I would just add, on Wednesday and Thursday nights, the Coolidge, last time we spoke, I think they were going to add third screenings of both of those.
And what, is that at 11 or something?
Yeah, it would probably be 10:15, 10:30, 11, depending.
Okay.
So you'd have to check in with them about that.
Yeah, but again, there aren't many seats, so do call.
There's,
yeah, Karen?
I just got a call. There's only 45 seats.
45, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Great.
It's a great place to see because it's so comfortable. The screening room's beautiful, but yes, the downside is it is a very small room.
Okay.
7 days in Tehran, I will say, not the happiest film in the festival, but definitely an amazing, insightful sense of humor to the film. And it's the story of a man, Reza Khatibi. He's actually the filmmaker. He plays himself in the film. It's what we call a mockumentary. It's supposed to be the story of a French film crew who goes back to Tehran to shoot a piece for French television, when in fact it's a drama. It's not really a documentary at all. They're acting.
Interesting.
But some of the instances in the film are very much Reza Khatibi's true story. He's someone who left Iran when he was 15 and grew up in France, and now when he goes back is sort of caught between the two cultures. And we find that a lot of people can relate to this story because there are many people in this country who had to leave their home countries at a certain age when they were in their teens, and then you end up growing up in the States or England or France or whatever. And then at a certain age, 30, 31, whatever it is, you go back and you do feel just like Reza feels.
Yeah.
Caught between these two cultures, and sort of they understand that you're Iranian or Lebanese or whatever you are, but then you're also kind of not.
Yeah.
And there's humor that arises from that, but there's also a sort of sadness that comes from that as well. And there's one scene in the film, just to give people an example, where he's with his mother and they call back to Paris because he has a little daughter. And the daughter and the grandmother can't speak because the daughter only speaks French and the grandmother only speaks Farsi.
Oh, my.
And it's just an example.
Oh, my.
She keeps speaking to the little girl, you know, and trying to...
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just so symbolic.
Yeah, very much so. I want to ask you, these... You know, we watch television, you know, a little bit, and there's cable, and there's, you know, some better programming on cable, and there's the Sundance Channel and stuff like that. Is there ever a chance of there being an HRW channel or some channel that would show these pieces so that they could get out to the world?
Yeah. There are some satellite networks that exist. I don't know if people might be familiar with something called Global Vision.
Yeah, sometimes late at night on Channel 44 at 3 o'clock in the morning, they switch over to Global Vision.
Really?
Really?
Really.
Yeah.
There's something, you know, I have to be honest with you. It's been discussed at various points about Human Rights Watch Film Festival doing some sort of block of programming or licensing certain things for television. It's not an outlandish idea.
Yeah.
I would allude to one concept, which I was discussing with someone at the festival. This is where the philosophical and lofty nature of our work goes head-to-head with the commercial and financial aspects of our work. There are a lot of rights issues with films. Mm. People may... I'm sure you have similar issues.
Sure.
Yeah, you have to get into some pretty complicated negotiations.
No, we don't know anything about that because we're all out of pocket and we give it all away.
There you
go. That's the honest truth. But, of course, making a film is a much more complicated procedure than making a radio show and takes a lot more resources. You know, Andrea, I think we're pretty much out of time, and Karen's giving me the, you know, we got to get going signal, so we have to move along. But I just want to thank you so much for doing this work and for bringing this festival to Boston. This is, and I just want to again reiterate to everyone who's listening to this, it has been so powerful to see these three that we've seen, these three films, and it really, it just, I don't know, it's like. It's more important to me than the New York Times or, you know, the newspaper, because this is the real story, up close and personal.
No,
first
one more
person.
Time, though. Will Gaza repeat? Will people have a chance to see what you're talking about?
No, Gaza's done. Gaza's done for the festival.
What is it?
But you can go to their website at hrw.org.
I will say just a quick heads up.
Yep.
Strong chance Gaza Strip will come out this spring.
Oh.
Wonderful.
Okay. Here in Boston.
Great.
Good.
That'd be great. Any concluding words, Andrea?
I just will close by saying thank you all so much, and thank you, Boston, because granted, we bring the films here, but the response in Boston is always exceptional, exceptional.
So, there's nothing else to do here.
Thank you. Thank you for being smart and caring.
And
awesome.
if there are educators or groups that are interested in sponsoring the films, if they go to the website, they can find out how they can go ahead and do that and put on their own film festival.
Yes, there's a traveling section that gives the how-to details and all our contact
Wonderful.
Info.
Wonderful.
Thank you so
and,
much,
Holly,
Andrea.
Thanks to you, and please pass on our thanks to everyone at HRW who's doing this very, very important work.
Extremely Certainly important. Will.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Good
you.
Night. Bye
Goodbye.
Now. Okay. All right, great stuff. We got a special message, Hal?
Come on, Alice. Everything's okay.
In 15 minutes, the Martins are supposed to be at their family reunion. They've been ready for hours, but they can't go yet. Alice Martin is still inside, checking the locks on every door and window in the house. She's done this 31 times this morning, just as she does every morning and every night. Alice suffers from obsessive-compulsive disorder, one of a group of real illnesses called anxiety disorders. More than 23 million Americans live with them, but they're not really living. They're plagued by uncontrollable fears, thoughts, and behaviors which grow progressively worse. They suffer. So do their families.
Alice? Honey?
We've just got to do something about this.
Anxiety disorders are frightening, real illnesses, but they're also treatable. Call 1-888-88-ANXIETY for more information and get your life back. A public service message from the National Institute of Mental Health.
Okay, now it's time for our announcements. Here's what's happening for the week of January 27th, 2003. On Wednesday, January 29th, 2 days from today, President Bush's warmongering State of the Union. Warmongering State. Well, yeah, you know, we don't usually put things in those terms, but he is a little bit on the dominate them track. Anyway, there's going to be, I guess, what is it? The very next day, there's going to be a demonstration.
Not during the speech?
No, the next day, Wednesday, at 5 p.m. at Park Street T Station. His State of the Union speech is Tuesday, so Park Street Station, 5 o'clock on Wednesday, there's a protest, a demonstration. For more information, go to IAC Boston or call 617-522-6626.
And Wednesday, January 29th, the theater offensive True Colors Out Youth Theater Troupe is looking for GLBT youth and their allies ages 16 to 22, and all troupe members are paid. Do you have some improvisational skills, a little experience with theater, or do you love to create art that takes the world by storm? Call ahead to reserve an audition spot. There'll be open auditions from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. or 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Cloud Foundation at 647 Boylston Street, third floor in Boston. For more information, call 617-621-6090, or you can go to www.theateroffensive.org.
And this Friday, January 31st, Hedwig and the Angry Inch are happening at Axis, and we have a pair of tickets to give away to the third caller to 617-253-8810. Peter's right there at the phone. Peter and Karen, third caller gets a pair of tickets to Hedwig and the Angry Inch at Axis, 7 p.m. Doors open, 7:30 p.m. showtime, starring Greg Dante and Lisa Bonet. Again, that's the third caller, caller number 3.
And Peter's going to be interviewing Gene on his show, I think, Friday at 10 a.m.
Okay, great. So caller number 3 at 617-253-8810.
Okay, and Friday, January 31st, Writers with Drinks, the acclaimed spoken word variety show, returns for 2003. There'll be poets, stand-up comics, science fiction authors, literary authors, nonfiction writers, and others who combine their talents to create a unique experience at the Lizard Lounge, Mass Ave in Cambridge. For more information, you call 617-547-0759 or go to www.writerswithdrinks.com.
And if you've missed anything, if you need a phone number, or email, or web address, give us a call at 617-253-8810. March 6th to the 9th, is the Colorado Gold Rush Conference in Denver, Colorado. For more information, go to Colo Gold Rush, colo goldrush.org. Keynote speakers will be Dana Rivers, Sandra Cole, and Phyllis Fry.
Okay, and March 14th through the 16th, the City Lakes Cross-Gender Community will have their Spring Fling, and this will be in Roseville, Minnesota. For more information, you can go to www.clccmn.com, and this is the City of Lakes Cross-Gender Community, which is an organization for transgendered peoples and allies in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota.
Okay, that does it for the announcements.
Okay, and now we have Liza Shapiro, who is a genderqueer butch dyke boy fag who doesn't care which pronouns you use in addressing her and who hates it when people make assumptions. She's been stirring things up in Boston for 8 years with Truth Serum production events and shows, and she's getting ready to open Candyland at the Milky Way Lounge and Lanes in Jamaica Plain on February 2nd. Liza is also the drag king Haywood Wakefield, who along with performing at different clubs around New England, also hosts Glitter Switch Drag Karaoke. And welcome to Gender Talk, Liza. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Or is it Haywood?
Oh, well, it's Aliza, first of all. It's okay. And generally, well, I'm in drag now because I have to perform at 10 tonight at Jacques.
So are you done up like Haywood?
I am.
And how's that?
Big mustache, big sideburns, and I'm doing a Willie Nelson song tonight. So,
cool.
I'm in a cowboy kind of thing.
Oh, this is great.
All right. So you've been doing the events organizing in Boston for how long?
For 8 years. I used to work at a record label called Pop Narcotic, and it came out of working there. Bands wanted me to book shows and tours, and so I got into doing that even after the label closed down.
How did you move from there into drag?
Drag started about 3 years ago. I did my first performance as a Valentine's present for my girlfriend at Jacques on a Wednesday amateur night. And, I don't know, actually. Truth Serum started, I would produce shows, and I was really behind the scenes, and I'd do all the promoting and all the production, but I'd never get up on stage, and I was always pretty nervous, and I'd make other people make announcements and introduce the bands. And then the last 4 years, I just started getting more comfortable with it, and then I decided it would be fun to surprise my girlfriend with a song at Jacques.
So is that part of your plan all along?
To
get yourself on stage?
Maybe subconsciously.
Yeah. So it just kind of naturally developed. Tell us about the drag king Haywood Wakefield.
Okay. I think the Truth Serum stuff was all about bringing people together. So whether or not getting on stage grew out of that, I guess it did. But I mostly like to put on shows where I can show people what I like or get them to listen to the music I like or the performers I like. But and Haywood Wakefield developed. He's still developing, but he was born 3 years ago at Jacques, and he's a divorced father of a daughter who's a lesbian. And he was divorced and brokenhearted and found himself in karaoke bars in the South Shore and North Shore until, he found community there and they were really supportive of him and the divorce. And, you know, he's crying in his beer every night. But they finally told him that he had a lousy voice. And so he started lip syncing. And then his daughter told him that he should, you know, try to do this thing in dyke clubs and around Boston so he can be seen in a lot of space with the lesbians. He's unsure whether it's okay to say dyke or not, even though his daughter tells him it's okay.
So you really haven't put very much thought into this character, I can tell.
Oh, no, not at all.
You've got a whole history here. This is great. How is Haywood received by the audience?
He's pretty well received. I think he throws people a little bit because what his the songs that he likes to do are your mother's favorite hits from your childhood. So he's delving into the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And for a lot of the audience who are younger, they don't get it. It's pretty conceptual. You know, I'm doing Neil Sedaka, Paul Anka, Neil Diamond, Barry Manilow, Willie Nelson. And so some of it's a little conceptual, but Engelbert Humperdinck, you know, I love him. How can I not do it?
well, that's really wild and variable. Now, for a long time, we've heard about drag queens at Jacques and drag queens performing, but the phenomenon of drag kings now, when did that happen? And it sounds like it's now taking the bars and the clubs by storms.
Yeah, there's definitely been a big move in Boston in the last few years for getting kings into the bars. I have actually, there's an article attached to my website where I track the history of drag kings in Boston. It's at truthserum.org.
Uh-huh.
In 1992, it goes back to like the ICA brought,
And tell us what the ICA is.
Oh, sorry, the Institute of Contemporary Art did a show called,
Dress Codes.
Sorry?
Dress codes.
Yes, dress codes. Right. I think, Nancy, that's when I met you.
Yeah. Okay.
And,
That was
yeah,
ancient
so
history.
Some of the performance started out of there, but then there's drag king sluts and goddesses who started doing shows, full-blown theater productions around that time as well, but not necessarily in the bars.
Uh-huh.
But we've seen a resurgence of drag king action in the last few years. There was a bunch of dykes who started going to Jacques on Wednesdays when it was amateur night, and they would have amateur drag queens, and we decided, well, wouldn't it be funny if we started, you know, competing also and getting up there. And then some of us, a lot of those people who competed back then haven't continued, but some of us have made friends with the queens, and they invite
us. And how's
us.
That working out?
It's been good. They have, the queens have some issues with the gender pronouns, which comes probably from their cultural aspect of,
meaning
you know,
they...
everybody's a girl. Hey, girl, how you doing?
Oh, okay.
So, you know, so they don't want to call you guys.
Yeah. So gets a little confusing in the dressing room.
Okay.
So we're doing a little
education
there.
That's a queenie kind of affectation, though, to call everyone girls,
girl.
Isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we get all insulted.
And that's a guy kind of thing.
Yeah, we're sensitive, you know. We don't want our macho-ness.
Now, do you ever incorporate one another in the shows?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
My favorite part of it is doing duets with the queens.
Oh, that's great.
This sounds like a good thing for jocks.
Yeah. I would hope so. They've been putting us in the ads, and I've been getting press for shows over there, so
really?
Hopefully it'll help them. And I know they're having a struggle right now, which is really annoying. I heard it was in the Globe today.
What? Tell us about it. We don't know
about
it.
Oh, they're getting, let's say attacked by the upwardly mobile gay men in the neighborhood who have banded together to try and get their license revoked
because
they're complaining of noise and violence and prostitution in the neighborhood.
Oh, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah.
This is the last drag bar. This is the only tranny bar in town.
Right.
They've got a police, and now they're getting
moved into the Bay Village. They knew there was a bar there. Yeah. Get over it.
Yeah, exactly. Jax was there before you were, thank you.
Yeah. So it's there's something in the Globe today, and there's a hearing in a couple of weeks that they're really asking people to show up for.
Okay, I guess
so they're taking it seriously, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe it's time for us to mobilize.
Yeah, that would be...
That would be good. Yeah,
you might want to talk to some of those.
You know, I can't say that, you know, Jacques has always been at the top of my list, but at the same time, I've always felt at home there. I've always felt supported there. And I think it's important that...
It's important to keep that space.
Well, that's
it?
One of the things they talked about in the Globe article, is one of the few places in the city where a transgender individual can go and feel at all comfortable.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And where you will be welcomed without question.
Which is an excellent lead into my other shows.
Please.
Great.
Yeah, go for it.
But I love Jacques. It's one of my favorite places to hang out. So in any way that I can support them, I will. So.
I like Jacques too. And you know, I played there when we had our band Transgression going. We had a regular gig there, and we really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Got to know the folks a little bit there, and it's good folks there. So.
But another couple of places where trans folks can feel comfortable are at the I'm creating this Candyland. Club. It's a queer club for all genders at the Milky Way on Sunday nights, and our grand opening is February 2nd. And
what's the Milky Way?
The Milky Way Lounge and Lanes is a bar and bowling alley and restaurant in Jamaica Plain.
Oh, sounds like fun.
Yeah, and it's actually, my grandfather used to own it, so it's kind of
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What a trip.
Oh,
long
cool.
old history in the 50s, yeah.
Oh, so
I came from Bowling Magnate.
Oh, I love it.
Bowling, isn't that an oxymoron, Bowling Magnate?
Yeah, it probably is.
So maybe, did Haywood ever bowl, or?
Yeah, I'm sure he has bowling. He's got some pretty bad pants, so I can imagine him bowling.
All right.
At some point, I'll be developing Haywood's ex-wife, also who's a realtor.
Oh, are you going to do them both?
I think I am.
I like that.
It's going to take me a few years to get used to the idea of being a femme again. So.
You know, really like the drag king stuff because it's really deconstructing gender and taking things to wild places.
Definitely more so than most of the drag queens are doing now. So I think that's one of the big differences in the culture. And it's so fluid. And
I think there have been some drag queens who have done some wonderful deconstruction doing
camp.
Transition off stage and stuff like that. So I don't want to take it all away from the queens because I think
I presented the Cockettes at the film festival last year. I'm definitely all for them deconstructing.
Yeah.
I hear that.
Yeah.
So let's see, Candyland on Sunday, and the big grand opening is on the 2nd, and one of the things that will be here is Fireball's Drag Bingo, which incorporates drag queens and drag kings.
Drag bingo.
And it's all usually for a benefit, or it's always a benefit. And
so this is bingo run by drag kings and queens?
And do we have to be on drag to play bingo, or what?
Yeah,
you don't have
this.
To be in drag, okay. But everybody is welcome. You can come in drag if you like.
But the people running it will be costumed,
yes,
appropriately?
Yes.
Cool.
Which is
fun.
The same thing for drag karaoke, which I host at Hollywood on Saturday.
So it's a great opportunity if you feel like playing around a little bit with a little bit of cross-dressing or drag,
right,
or whatever. If you'd like to try,
yeah,
just putting on a mustache for a night or throwing on a dress for a night, you know, it's a good opportunity.
Or high silver shoes.
I would say that Fireballs probably isn't the place, but Glitter Switch Drag Karaoke, which I host the third Saturday of the month at Hollywood KTV in Chinatown, definitely the place for that.
Okay, what's Fireball? I missed Fireball.
Fireballs is the drag bingo show.
Okay.
Which will be the 2nd. I'm sorry, I'm giving lots of information.
Yeah,
okay.
We've got to organize this a little bit. Okay, so Candyland is at the Milky Way.
Every Sunday.
Every Sunday.
And then incorporated into Candyland on the 2nd and 4th Sundays will be Fireball's Drag Bingo.
Okay, and this is like not a beginner event? Is that what you're saying?
Anybody is welcome to come, and it's queer all genders. If you want to express yourself however you want, please come out in garb.
Okay.
We will welcome you. If you're interested in getting on stage in drag.
Oh, no, it's not a stage event for people. Right, yeah, no, I didn't mean to imply that.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
No, I meant like, you know, people who just like, you know, just want to try going out. You know, who want to dress up a little bit for a change.
We would love that.
Yeah.
And if you know,
the house
cross-dressing
theater.
Cocktail party, come on out, have dinner with your girlfriends. You know?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's where we're at.
So basically every Sunday night, the Milky Way and Jamaica Plain. Cool.
Sounds
and you
great.
Can bowl a little bit, it
And you can bowl
like.
A little. We are talking about some strip bowling and other erotic-style bowling events.
Oh, okay.
That with Charlie from Writers with Drinks. She's been dreaming up.
This is the lazy cross dresser, Charles Anders. Yes.
Yes.
She's so great.
Yeah.
Okay.
All
interesting.
Right.
She's also a regular at Glitter Switch.
Okay, tell us a little bit more about Glitter Switch. I didn't really get the story on that.
Okay. So Glitter Switch is a drag karaoke night.
Karaoke.
Yes.
So it's not lip syncing, you're actually singing.
Yes.
Although
if you do want to lip sync, you can. Bring a CD and
you can lip sync.
You can come in drag or not, and you can lip sync or not. We're open to all of it, and anybody who wants to get up on stage can get up on stage.
Okay, so this is a stage opportunity.
Right.
So it's a really do it up.
Yeah. And we've had an incredibly broad selection of people in the audience. People with excellent voices and lots of training come dressed up and not dressed up, and then we have, you know, we've had several cross-dressers come, some trans folks, there's always
great
female to male, transsexuals, in, you know, different levels. Everybody is welcome.
Now, I've heard it said the difference between a cross-dresser and a drag queen is the drag queen, you don't have to teach her how to have fun with it. And so cross-dressers are welcome. So if you're not quite sure how to have fun with it yet, that's okay. Come on over and we'll help you out.
And also, karaoke is defined as drunk and out of tune. So even if you can't sing, don't worry about
there
it.
Well,
go.
See, that's, Haywood's thing is that he can't sing. So I get up there and I'm, you know, I'm hosting. And if people don't get up to sing, then I torture them with a song.
And, so it's like, get up and
little
sing.
Little incentive
or else I will.
There, huh?
Yeah, yeah. The goal, you know, it's like, let's not hear Haywood sing. Cause
I love that. I love, you know,
it's torturous.
Hearing you talk about Haywood, it's like, oh, I want to build a persona to play with.
It's very fun.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I was going to have so much fun with it.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, we had built some in some drag detective stories.
Yeah, we did a little bit. We just
wrote,
got our feet wet a little bit.
It was really fun.
You could come and perform it.
Oh, we could. We could.
the thing at Glitter Switch is that every time I do it, I try to bring in guest stars from out of town to inspire the audience perform drag.
We're real inspiring. I don't know. Actually, you know, we went down to Southern Comfort down in Georgia. Was it this past fall or the year before?
And what did we dress like? And nature.
We did that, but then we were in this... What was it called, the thing we're in?
The Traveling Medicine Show that Holly Boswell does, and I played
an MTF, and Nancy played an FTM. And people thought we were getting married.
Yeah. And I had on...
What did you do with all your hair?
What did I do with my hair? I guess I tied it back.
Yeah, she tied it back, and she put a suit on, and I had a wedding dress that was off the shoulders and silver shoes that made me taller than Nancy.
Oh, my God.
It was pretty fabulous.
It was fun. We had a great time, though. It was really fun.
Well, if you ever want to come and guest appear, just send me an email. Yeah.
We did have fun with that little play,
didn't we? It would actually be a good thing for us to do.
Oh, I'd love to.
Get out and have some fun and dress up. You know what? It's like we don't have any time to dress up anymore.
Yeah, and it's sad.
It's sad.
And we have what? We have slips that are 40 yards of nylon.
Oh yeah, we have all kinds of stuff.
Fabulous!
Yeah. Oh my God!
Yeah, they're great.
Oh, yeah. I do. I always keep a eyebrow pencil in my bag, in my pocket. So if anybody gets up on stage and they want a mustache or a beard, I can draw one on.
Now that's wonderful. That's really good.
When we start making some money, I'll probably buy some drag clothes, and we'll have a little trunk where people can come and put clothes on.
Oh, you know, that's fun. Great, I always keep a box filled with cloth and material and just wild things that we can hurl on at any given moment.
Right.
Us and the rest of the house. Now, I hear that there are international drag king conferences that are going on.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about this.
That was one of the highlights of last year, was going to Columbus, Ohio for the fourth annual International Drag King Extravaganza, IDKE. And it was blew my mind. I had no idea about it up until like 6 months before, and then I was completely excited.
How many people were at that? Was that a big deal?
There were like over 400 people signed up for the conferences, and then at the performances that happened each night, there was between 700 and 1,000 people.
My goodness.
Wow.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Cool.
Also, I wrote an article for Bay Windows documenting the conference, and that's at my website also.
Give your website if you would.
It's www.truthserum.org.
Okay, truthserum, truthserum.org. Aliza, we're down to like 30 seconds with you. You got anything that you left out that you want to put in?
Everybody should come down to the Candyland on Sunday, February 2nd, and if you can't make that date, every Sunday you're welcome to come. Starting at 7:30, we'll be opening the door to queers of all genders, and check out the website for other programs we're doing.
So it's a very welcoming environment, and everyone's welcome.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Oh, it sounds like fun.
Thanks for having me, folks.
Thank you, Aliza. Thank you for doing this. It's a great thing. You know, it's wonderful to have events that are very welcoming.
Yeah. No, my pleasure, always.
All righty.
Okay.
Take good care.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay,
good night.
Fun, and we'll look forward to seeing you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. That's cool. That sounds like fun.
Let's go bowling in big shoes.
Yeah, she's doing some good work there. All right, everybody. So there you have it, Mixture. We had some really serious stuff tonight, and we had some fun stuff. That was good. Anyway, coming up is the Classical Hour, so now we finally, we're done. Now you can listen to some music for a change. Our website is gendertalk.com, though. If you like what you hear here, you can hear lots more of it. There's over 300 programs there, lots of interviews on all kinds of subjects around gender and politics and race and class, you know, you name it, progressive issues, but mainly gender stuff, lots of it, and of course a lot of trans stuff there, gendertalk.com, and there's resources there. There's even a video you can download, and I just put up a link to the Take Back the Media website. We need to take back the media. We need to have media that serves us, not just a few powerful corporations.
Do you think we ever had the media?
To serve us. Well, that's a good question, Gertie.
Huh?
We'll try and get somebody on to tell us about that. Thanks to Jamie, Faye Fenton, and TGForum.com for hosting that archive. We couldn't do it without you. And that does it for our program tonight. We hope you've enjoyed our show. We sure enjoyed bringing it to you. On behalf of Hal Fuller, Karen Larson, Gertie McKenzie, and myself, Nancy Nangeroni, and our guest, Peter Choice for tonight, our special little guest here in the studio. Not our guest, our little drop-in.
Drop-in.
Yeah, there it is. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Remember, no matter what the occasion...
There you go.
That was a little bit fake. Yeah, I know.
You want to say it again?
Yeah, remember, no matter what the occasion...
Gender talk is always appropriate.
Good night, everybody.